We are checking in with State Representative Tacky Chan of Quincy for another Tacky Talk podcast here in the last week of March, Tacky.
I know it's a long month of March. It's a five Friday month, and actually April's gonna be long too. It's a five Monday month.
Okay, be prepared. Hopefully, the weather will get better by then.
Well, it is March 26, as you pointed out, and looking, as you can see over the screen to the window, and it's still gray, cloudy, and windy. I was joking early this month with the concept of the old, well, not concept, saying that we always use in school is that March winds, April showers, bring you May flowers. Well, March is delivering on the wind.
Yeah, it's technically the windiest month, according to the people at the Blue Hill Weather Observatory. So it's living up to its name for sure.
Yeah, it's making my sinus a little bit bonky, as you can hear a bit of a nasalness on my side. The sudden warmth last weekend and sudden chill out this weekend and through the weekend. Of course, we had another major rainstorm on Saturday. Those are some flooding in the city, but it seemed to be no worse than where is the city and DPW did a great job keeping up with the water.
Yeah, I didn't have anything major, thankfully. So let's hope that continues throughout the spring and hopefully things start to dry out here soon.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm a Monday garbage day, so I'm sure you've all had the same experience I did regarding recyclables and other stuff blowing in the wind around your house.
Exactly.
My recyclables, it's the neighbors.
So anything going on Beacon Hill we should know about?
Well, right now we're meeting Chairman Ways and Means. I had my meeting last Wednesday. Actually, tomorrow, Wednesday's House Asian Caucus meeting. We are basically still in conversations at this point. The House and Senate passed a variation of a supplemental budget, which transfers more ARPA money to address the migrant crisis, as well as some other issues of pandemic-era policies we talked about, such as outdoor dining, take-out alcohol, remote community meetings, and so forth, and city and town public meetings. And it may be going to conference committee maybe in a couple of days. So typical operating procedure right now in the legislature where neither side can agree on a single bill before it goes to the floor. So that's kind of the buzz right now is trying to figure out what's going to really happen there in terms of negotiations. And from the membership standpoint, time is running short. The fiscal year ends July 31st. That's going to come up on us really, really fast.
Yeah, I know that the revenge porn bill was part of that package that got approved. And Senator Keenan, one of the main sponsors of that, so I'm sure he was happy to see that.
Well, we sent them a revenge porn bill separately back at the beginning of the year. So I get it. I mean, it's a budget, you can package a thing into it, but the Senate, so I had an opportunity to debate the bill independently as opposed to wrap it into a larger piece. I get it. But from the House's position, we gave you a bill. Why don't you debate the bill we gave you?
Speaking of the migrant crisis, some changes announced, I guess, yesterday by the state in terms of trying to get folks out of the emergency system and into the mainstream.
Well, this is kind of a compounding problem, right? I mean, we want folks to get out of the emergency shelters, move them on to work permit, reduce the need for social services, and of course, we have a housing shortage. So it's like the perfect storm of problems hitting at once. The big one, of course, is the work permits. You hear about this all the time from us in the news. You can't get people to work, and you can't get them to sustain themselves. It ain't complicated. You got no work permit, you can't work unless you're going to do it illegally. Under the table, and the consequences of not contributing to Social Security and taxes, and that's unacceptable. So, as we continue to repeat ourselves, the federal government loves us a problem. The federal government's in charge of work permits, so they're not, helping out here in a creating an expedited system. And the sooner we are able to keep that moving along, the better. Like to remind folks, we still have all these other refugees here beyond the migrant issue. We have Ukrainians. We do have Haitian refugees that are not migrants. We do have Afghans. And I didn't know we had the Bhutanese. That's people from Bhutan. And we'll be seeing at some point probably some people from Myanmar, which that humanitarian civil war crisis continues in that country. So again, this country's always been welcoming to refugees and the state in particular. But no one tells us when people show up, which doesn't help. We don't know how many show up, and we don't know where they're going to be because the federal government is in charge of placement. And the migrant issue is a reflection of the fact they process them in the border, they're giving temporary legal status, and they kind of let them go where they want to go, as opposed to some kind of plan about, maybe should process work permits when they're processing them to give temporary legal status. Just saying.
Right, they could go work anywhere at that point.
Yeah, it kind of takes some pressure off of everyone because we know people that are looking for work will go to places that need workers. And thanks to the internet and cell phones, over time, that's what happens. It's the great American work part. Americans can go anywhere in the country to work. If you've got a work permit or you're a citizen, you got a social security number or EIN number, you can work anywhere in the U.S. that's willing to take you. And people who are looking for work gravitate towards work. It's always been the case in this country. That's how it goes. It's not like other places where countries are small. You have a trading bloc like the EU, which broke down barriers on work permitting because they want to be more like us in terms of migration work and stimulate economic development all over the continent. But you go to other places, they try to limit people from entering cities, for example, because that's where the economic centers are. Because of overcrowding. So, a part of capitalism and actually your First Amendment rights as the Commerce Clause rights, as the freedom of travel in the US.
Yeah, you don't need a passport to go to Rhode Island.
Oh, this is a colonial thing, right? This is actually was a conversation during the colonial era about whether or not you're right. Absolutely right. You need a passport to go to Rhode Island from Massachusetts. That was actually a real conversation back in the founding of the country, whether or not. About 13 currencies, 13 passports, 13 tariffs, 13 different standards of commerce and travel. This country at the very onset decided that, for the benefit of the whole, states would give up individual rights as sovereign entities in exchange of a greater good of a country.
And here we are today.
Yeah, I mean, this is something we take for granted. Not everybody can do what we do in terms of migration around the U.S. I have friends that left the state long, long time ago, and it's just because of work. And some for schooling. They went to other states to go to school, and they found out they like living in those states, and they never came back. Something you can do in this country. And of course, Massachusetts is interested in retaining our workforce, which means retaining students.
Right. It's funny you mentioned that. I was just reading a story this morning about the migration of young people out, mainly the center city of Boston, because of the high cost of living.
Yeah, I got to try to record an article. There was an article regarding what it takes for a single person to live in each city of the US. And of course, Boston is among the top 10. Most expensive. I want to say it's like $129,000-ish dollars, something like that.
That
That
sounds
if
right. Yeah.
single person, if you're single and you got to live just on basics, I mean, no vacations, no retirement savings, just to get by. I think it's 129 something thousand dollars. And I remember about 6 years ago, it was only $90,000 was the number, and that was appalling 6 years ago. So, I know that we have a lot of high tech jobs and white collar jobs, but these kids also saddle high debt in some cases, and you got to really just try to live as an independent individual yourself. No roommates, no girlfriend, no boyfriend, no partners, not depending on your parents. It is very hard.
Yeah, no question, for sure. And I think there's only so much government can do to address that. A lot of it is determined by the market.
Oh, well, you're absolutely right. I mean, this is a market-driven system on real estate, and you're all aware there's been talk about rent control over and over and over again. And everyone's trying to learn the lessons of pre-1994, particularly in Boston and Cambridge, where the last, truly the last spaces left in the state of rent control, as everyone moved away from rent control over the decades. And it's these are we. I talk to folks about this in the State House, and They all want these safeguards regarding, how much you're going to increase. They want accountability, livability. Try to avoid slum lords because, you're paying the rent for 30 years and you can't keep up with the cost of maintaining the property because what you pay and the property cost increases, don't match up. But property taxes are wacky because it's constantly changing due to housing construction and lack of commercial property, depending where you are, which shifts the cost. Every time you lose commercial property, shifts property tax costs onto the residential customers. I mean, it's just duh. I mean, you lose a commercial space rent, commercial-based property taxes, and it shifts the other way to residential. So, I've talked about this rent control issues, and you got all these other dynamics on trying to control rent, including unpredictability of taxes. The cost of utilities keep shifting around, especially water, is that keeps, pumping up. I think all looking at your water bill, you know exactly what I'm saying. And I wish it was easier to say, yeah, we just set the rent prices by the government, off you go. And it's not as simple as that because you still have to take in consideration of habitability and changing cost of property. And everybody here listening that pays utility bills, water bills, property taxes, and then you have to pay for cost of maintenance, depending, how long you live in your home. We're not talking about like refurbishing the kitchen. We're saying like changing the roof. You have shingles, for example. You're trying to, have a heating system or cooling system reaching end of lifespan, or maybe have like a pipe burst or something like that. I mean, these are real costs that everyone faces. And, this is about whether you have like a two or three family or you have like a 60 or 100 unit apartment building.
Right. Speaking of utility cost, National Grid's looking for an increase in their distribution rates, I think. And is that something that the state eventually would have to approve?
Yeah, the process is that the National Grid would put a request to the Department of Public Utilities, the DPU, for a rate increase in the distribution system. They would have to justify the rate increase by demonstrating that it's a cost of they need to do the cost of doing business. And the Attorney General's Office of Ratepayer Advocacy would investigate the case on behalf of ratepayers, and discovery will begin on the cost that National Grid is saying they need to spend on, capital infrastructure, office, cost of doing business, like everyone else, salaries, health insurance, things like that. Expenses, and then they want a rate of return because you may not realize this, but the utility bill is not 100% by you, 100% paid by you. It's actually a lot of private shareholders as well as public shareholders' money that's basically fronting your capital improvements, maintenance costs, and so forth on your behalf. So, there is a shareholder cost as well as private entities that have investments in the business and also bonds, right? They have to borrow money or take loans out to maintain the system. So, you actually have to pay the interest back and the ratepayers pay that back. So, there's, needs some profit, obviously, and they have a rate of return. And whenever you have like a major storm event, the money isn't there right away. It isn't like this magic storage of money. I mean, they have to only charge you what they're going to do for services. So they float loans out, and not surprising that sometimes they're all selling their shares, privately held shares in company, into the public market to get some money to cover some costs, and then to buy back shares or whatnot they have to do to maintain share prices. So it's pretty intricate, as you can tell. It's the ability for public utilities to get money in emergency situations, the ratepayers, have to help flip some of the costs. So it's a lot of moving parts involved in this. And it's distribution rates. It's the small wires, not the big wires. So the wires in front of your home are what I call the distribution small wires. The mega size wires that are like 200, 300 feet in the air, those are the transmission lines, which is a separate charge. And of course, we don't do energy to the National Grid or NSTAR. We don't own a utility company. That's all private market. The utility companies provide basic rate, which is like every 6 months they will bid for a rate in the competitive marketplace. And if you're not part of a private non-utility energy supplier, you're automatically a utility supplier because they're still required to ensure that you get electricity. And the standard is safe and reliable service at a reasonable cost. That is the legal standard. So, it'll take about 3 months ish to complete this investigation and DPE to make a ruling on the rate. And not surprising, I mean, the AG's office will ask for low and until they ask for high, and the DPE will try to find somewhere middle ground that justifies the rate increase pursuant to the evidence provided.
Yeah. So I, as you know, here in Quincy, the city is looking to a municipal aggregation policy or procedure. So buying electricity in bulk and then reselling it, is that how that would work?
Well, actually, that's been approved by the DPU with some caveats. The city has to comply. There was some, looks like based on what I read, there was some application problems on the forms, which are not fatal. They're not fatal issues. So the city has to do some small corrections, it looks like, and then they can go into the market to bid for energy. And then the city will be locked in for a term of years on the energy, and then those. You'll be buying energy from a private supplier that is not the utility that the city put a bid out on to get a price. It is a opt-out system. It is not an opt-in system. So once the city is able to get that contract locked down, you will get a letter from the city telling you that, hey, we got energy from X company. This is the rate. This is the rate that will increase on a yearly basis if there is one. Depending on the contract, maybe it's just flat rate for X period of time. If you want to participate, you don't have to do anything. If you want to get out of it, go back to the utility or find your own private energy supplier. You have to write back or fill out the form or whatever to opt out. My advice to everyone is wait until you see what the city has to offer because once they complete that process, we'll see it. And then you're obviously able to look at your electric bill for the basic service rate, which I will bet the city can get a lower price than. And then you can also go on the internet. The state has a website to provide, which I don't remember off the top of my head, as you can tell, but we do have a website that does price comparisons of some of the biggest energy suppliers in the country that is legally allowed to sell electricity in Massachusetts and their fuel mixtures. So, if you want, large quantity of windmill power, you can get a summary on the website of where the basics are. And like cable television and cell phones, there's introductory offers. So be cautious. Just like cell phones and cable TV, there's that introductory offer at a slower rate, and then it'll pop up to a larger.
It locks you in too, so you do need to be read all the fine print, yeah.
In terms of contract, there's also a big part too, whether it's an auto renewal. So, I generally would advise folks to start hunting for electrical prices soon because the summer months are coming up quickly. Although, again, long month of March, long month of April, for us psychologically, the prices will start shifting because the price of oil and gas will shift as we head into summer, and energy prices will shift with them. I don't know how long the city's going to take regarding this bid process. It is not. As simple as it sounds, just saying put an RFP out, you actually have to do some research. As you can tell, listening to me, researching energy suppliers, but also understanding the shifting energy market regarding both fossil fuels and renewable power sources is a constant moving target. It isn't like a windmill is always going to give you the same rate of power every single day. I mean, it's always a moving target. So, it's kind of a work in progress. And when I get my letter, we'll have a conversation about said letter, about how you should all read it. But until I get it in my hand, I can't tell you exactly what it's going to look like.
So who would you pay? Who would you pay? Do you pay the city? Do you pay the utility? How does that work?
It'll be through utility. It should be a single bill, because the bill utility billing system should be able to identify the city of Quincy, obviously, and then subdivide out, the pass-through costs, pass-through utility. It will be a separate, could it be a separate bill? Absolutely could be a separate bill. So the, energy charge would disappear off your National Grid bill, and instead you get a separate bill for electrical usage. But you only got one meter, and the meter's in front of your house, and the meter's owned by the utility. So in theory, you could get a separate charge, but it involves the utility measuring the electricity coming out of your home. Then sending information to the supplier, who then has to bill you separately. You can see the accounting challenges there. So it's, somewhat easy just to, utility do it and then just tell the supplier, like, hey, this is what's used, what's your rate? And
Right.
then tack it onto your bill. So it can be done more than one way, but the most efficient way would be the utility.
Okay, yeah, I know it's been done in Boston for years, I know, so it's not nothing new. It's and certainly it can, can be done. It's there's already a system set up for it.
Yeah, and the ability to get a bulk rate on the city of Quincy as on a whole should give us a very competitive price, because there's what, 100, 200, 4,000 people here, about 60,000-ish properties, and they all use electricity, obviously. So, given the bulk purchasing ability, you should get a better rate than the basic rate by the utility, and it'll be very competitive if you go into private market. So, but the city also needs to consider, does it want to use a different fuel mixture, or do they just want the lowest rate? Do they want to have like 20% fossil? Do they want 70% renewable? I don't know what they're thinking. I mean, it's something that can be part of the city process to look at what you want to do. And again, you have to know the energy market, because the energy market fluctuates. So you got to know when to put the RP in, since you got to take your best guess. So, for example, gasoline, I don't go notice, is somewhere between 307 and 315 in inside the city area. You go to Boston, it's closing in on like 360 and going up more, which means the energy market's shifted really quickly in the last 2 months regarding oil in particular. And what does the city go in now to put a bid in, or do they wait a little longer? And are they going to be monitoring the price of solar and wind, on a national level inside the ISO, actually not national, inside the ISO New England grid, because you can only really buy power that's part of the states that are connected to the same part of the grid. Like, I can't buy California power. You really can't, because California's not connected to our section of the grid, which is the east. Well, actually, central to east and north and southern Canada. That's part of, that's all.
Yeah, you really need somebody expert in that field, I think, to at least advise you on how to do it.
Yeah, it's well worth the money to find a person that has a lot of experience in this, because whatever you pay the person would be enormous savings for homeowners.
Right, exactly. Okay, something to look forward to. Just another form to worry about.
I'll keep an eye on that letter from the city. Like I said, once I get my letter, happy to sit here and we can go through it if you want.
Yeah, I think that'd be worthwhile, actually. A lot of people have questions, I'm sure, maybe it would be helpful. You never know.
You never know. Sometimes I know something, sometimes I don't, as I like to tell people.
Hey, what's going on with the MBTA lately, Tacky?
Oh, well, the T is still having problems, and so the new derailments are happening, and it's unfortunate. And this continues to be a long-term maintenance issue of neglect. Again, I still go back to Beverly Scott. I know she's not the sole problem, but all it takes is one bad GM and the whole thing goes to pot pretty quick, particularly the maintenance issue. Saving money by not doing maintenance is not smart. And also damage from snowstorms over time. I mean, Snowzilla did a number in the entire system. I know it was 2015, but that stuff catches up in New England, because we have snow, we have cold, we have heat, and it's metal. And you've got very old electrical systems on top of the blue line and parts of the green line, so, and parts of the orange line. So, as we've seen in the news, get to be plagued by maintenance issues, and whether I just keep up with everything that's going on. The red line is slowly but steadily coming back to normal, but slowly and steady. It's not like it's going to happen in a hot minute. And then there'll be public hearings going on soon regarding the MBTA lower fare rate for income folks. We have discount fares for students or discount fares for senior citizens, and they want to propose putting out a discount fare for people 200% of the federal poverty level. We'll see how that plays out. And the T also needs a new fare system. Charlie's system is antiquated, and Charlie's system is terrible. I mean, by the way, we're a low bid state, just to keep remember, folks, we're a low bid state, so we take the lowest bid, as long as it meets the standards of the contract. We don't take the best technology available, regardless of cost. And technology is not like buying paper clips. You get what you pay for. So I'm not, you know, I mean, no taxpayer or ratepayer or customer wants to pay more than they have to. Well, but you do get what you pay for in the local state process. You may find better tech, could do the same work as the lesser tech, which but the lesser tech is the lowest bid.
Does seem kind of counterintuitive to cut fares when they're already looking at a huge deficit.
Oh yeah, I mean this is the problem. I mean the COVID recovery has been slow. People are still working from home. Commuter rail, you know, you've seen rail problems. You saw them. Another commuter hit a tractor trailer on the Fitchburg line, which again very scary of how you need to clear the crossing. I still am always shocked that vehicles can't figure out and people can't figure out that blinking lights mean something's going to happen. And I do know that intersection has some issues regarding the gate, but there is like blinkers and noise. And there's like train horn. I'm just saying. So, you know, I can't blame everything on the MBTA. I mean, there is a human component to some of this stuff too. And you know, it's, you know, some of it is, you know, human factors. But you know, the T is, you know, in recovery mode. And but I want to remind folks, before COVID, when the T was packed like sardines, you're not making more money because you can't put in more people on the train, and you can't put more trains because you can't add more cars to a train because of the way the tunnel system's kind of this windy old tunnel system, plus the platforms aren't long enough. You have to expand every platform inside the tunnels. There's no more space to put platforms, plus the fact that you got a winding tunnel. So there is a point where you can only add so many cars, and you can only squeeze so many trains between time frames safely. There's emergency notices. You know, it's constantly emergency on the train. You want to get enough brake time for the train behind you so you don't cause a crash. So you can't like cram them like 5 minutes apart. I mean, if they're like 5 minutes apart, and God forbid, the train's in front and the one's coming up behind you at 40 miles an hour, and you guys all hopefully remember your physics lessons. You know, a lot of mass and speed. Takes a long time to slow down. So, you know, the T really is a combination of issues where, you know, before COVID, you already packed to the gills. Costs don't go down. Costs have obviously gone up. You all feel the same cost we, you know, we're feeling, and the T feels the same cost you're feeling. And yeah, I have a lot of scratchy head moments about this low income fare proposal. We'll see what the public hearings are like and whether or not the T can figure out the math.
I know we haven't talked about in a while, Tacky, is ballot questions and if any have been certified, what we're looking at in the fall.
Well, I mean, we have the special committee. There's a special joint committee on ballot questions that is out there. I'm trying to remember who chairs it. I think it's Representative Leader Paish, and I think it's Cindy Freeman, I think, in the Senate. I'm trying to remember. But you know, we had set up a separate special joint committee to look at just the ballot questions. Let's see if we can remember this correctly. We have the minimum wage increase regarding restaurant workers, tip service workers. We have the so-called rideshare contractor law change, which is both issues actually very complicated. We have the state auditor trying to get change in the law to audit the legislature. I still believe we have separation of powers problem. This is a constitutional issue. And then you got psychedelics, which are jokingly called magic mushrooms. If you're old enough to know what I'm saying, you probably know exactly what I'm saying if I say the words magic mushrooms. But you know, psychedelics have proven to some effectiveness at Johns Hopkins research regarding a lot of mental health issues and, you know, chemical imbalances. So not saying it's a perfect drug. I'm not saying it's a drug that's a miracle worker, but you know, people are looking at this as something we should legalize to do more research. But no one can explain the ballot question to me because that's one question I've talked to some folks about, and they're like, we don't understand how this would work.
Okay. It just it wouldn't just legalize them.
No, there's like a whole regulatory process. No one knows how it works.
Okay.
And to be honest with you, stuff like that, you know, Johns Hopkins is doing research. I mean, you need a medical profession. You can't just like self-medicate.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. It's not going to be like, recreational marijuana mushroom shops popping up all over.
Yeah, I mean, I think the intention is to provide it as medical, medical assistance, pharmaceutical. But like I said, I don't understand how this legislation works. We all look at it like I don't understand which way this thing's heading. Other facts looking to legalize psychedelics. So, I believe those are the four ballot questions, unless I'm missing one.
No, I think you got them all. But I was questioning, have they all been certified? Or are they all definitely going to appear? Do you know?
Well, this legislature has to the beginning of May to pass them into law, basically being when the governors have signed the law. We historically have not done that. No, we just don't do that. And then they would have to go get more signatures to get on the ballot by August.
I
And
see.
then if they make the ballot question signature requirement, it's on to November, and you all and me have a chance to vote at the ballot box what we think of these.
I see. Okay, gotcha. So it's they're still in the developing process.
Yeah, and they all should have a ballot petition campaign accounts at the Office of Campaign Political Finance. And the question is there going to be big money coming in as independent expenditures advocating for and against these ballot questions? Independent expenditure PACs are not just regarding candidates. You can use them for ballot questions by third-party industries. So, yeah, I'd be curious how this puts out in terms of who can get the next set of signatures, but also what money is involved, kind of clues you in exactly where the interest comes from.
Yep, absolutely. Sure. It was just like the so-called right to repair law that, happened a few years ago.
Well, it was heavily funded by a third party manufactured part company, funded by your car repair shop down the street. It was predominantly funded by third party manufactured parts, as well as the supersized car repair shops. I mean, the big chains, nationally, were pushing that ballot question. So, I mean, they don't actually have it advertised truthfully, guys. I mean, they can advertise whatever you want regarding these questions. There is no law saying you have to be honest about it. So, when you saw these small businesses, maybe, yeah, they contributed some money, but they weren't exactly pumping in 100 grand.
No, they can't. That's not in their business model to be able to do that, right?
Yeah, so where did the money come from, right? So, we always known that third party part manufacturers were funding those ballot questions.
Do you know, Tacky, that the federal government just passed their spending bill to so the government wouldn't shut down. Anything in that for Quincy, do you know, or Massachusetts for that matter?
I can't say for sure what's actually in there. I mean, obviously, you can ask the federal delegation. I know that there was some various grant monies in there for different programs that not-for-profits, municipalities can apply for, but hasn't been authorized yet. So, for example, you can talk to Philip Chung at Queen's Station Resources, but they had a CDC grant they won. They got approved, but it wasn't funded yet. So as part of this funding package, to set whatever grant programs that the government agreed to that it's an ongoing program or a new program that's under law, has been funded. So Queen's Asian Resources were waiting for this federal funding to come through, and now it has. I mean, obviously it has to go through the comptroller and all the various bureaucratic mechanisms of accounting, but they're going to get their money now, or not now, but soon. I think that was approved last summer, if I remember correctly. So, they need until the authorization of the budget. They were kind of like just waiting it out. I always remind folks, I mean, when it comes to fundraising for charitable organizations, the government is probably not your first choice source for steady income, to be honest with you.
It gets mired down in the political process, and you can't really count on it.
Well, and the federal government inability to A, have a budget, because they don't, you'd have continuing resolutions of spending. That's not a budget. That's just like stopgas. They have eight of these resolutions they've had since the George W. Bush administration. The last budget that was approved, I think, may have been the end of Clinton, the first year of George W. That's how long it's been since the federal government had like a budget. Where you didn't have to do continuing resolutions. This was your spending, and this was it. And End of story. But yeah, no, they've been, functioning without an actual budget for a very long time with these continuing resolutions. And it's kind of how it works down there. And everyone's always in pins and needles. And I talked to a couple of friends that been to feds for a very long time, and a lot of people are thinking about leaving again because this uncertainty of whether you're gonna get paid. Yeah, it's the federal government, you have a job, but you may not get paid now, and you may go for who knows how long without pay. So, a lot of people are rethinking their careers at this point because it's gone on for too many years, too long, in this kind of behavior.
Interesting.
No, you like the idea that you don't ever gonna get paid next week, and you might have to wait, who knows?
Yeah, it's unsettling, I'm sure, especially if you have a family you're trying to support. Yeah.
Yeah, it used to be like the most steady gig ever. We'll work for the feds, and for the last 20 plus odd years, it doesn't seem to be that way. And continuing resolutions, you can ask Steve Lynch or when or Senator Marcus, Senator Warren, but my always understanding was continuing resolutions lets them work outside of a balanced budget.
Oh, interesting. Okay. So I wonder why the deficit's out of control.
That's correct. I mean, if you have a budget submission to Congress, it has to be a balanced budget, or at least a balanced budget, with the intention of borrowing, because you're going to be a bloated budget or out of balance budget. We can, you can create some surety to the public that, we're going to take this on debt because the budget's this size, but we know what the debt's going to look like because, well, we don't know because of the interest rates, but we know we have to borrow X amount plus interest, right? That's not what's going on here. I mean, right now they're, unlike us, the state, right now, the Congress is just like, hey, we got these eight resolutions for different sectors of government. Let's add and remove stuff. We'll put amendments of public policy, take amendments off of public policy, change laws, as they're doing it like in one document. And then, they can do supplemental budgets or, agency money transfers, which we do as well. But I mean, you also don't have line item veto. So the president can, wholesale reject or keep. And Reagan was probably one of the most famous ones. Ronald Reagan rejected a budget because he wanted to get his tax package done and force Congress to negotiate. So, neither branch and neither party, regardless if it's a single party in three branches or not, has been able to put together a budget like you see in state governments or corporations or not-for-profits or you at home. And I'm always amazed that the public can't seem to like know that they don't have like an annual budget. And again, your budget may be out of balance, right? You need to borrow, but at least you know what you're borrowing subject to
Right.
interest.
Right. Yeah, at the state level, you have to have a balanced budget by law.
That's correct. I mean, we either have to find money from the rainy day fund, rob from a trust fund, so to speak. Do account transfers to balance different parts of the budget, or we have to straight up cut. And the government did 9C cuts in December, to try to get ahead of a potential budget shortfall projection. And we have a lot of mechanisms to move money around, draw money from backup, and also just straight up cut. And we're already warning folks that next fiscal year's budget projections are being very, very conservative. And we'll try to temper expectations next year. And, we've had some pretty flush years in terms of a good economy starting around 2016. We've had a good run of a strong economy. And of course, COVID was weird, but, we had backfill Fed money. And then the Fed's, putting a lot of stimulus into like almost every other sector of the economy, which Massachusetts is going to benefit from. And but that takes time for that stuff to trickle down to tax dollars. It isn't like we're going to dump $1 billion into a public works project. You don't see the entire economic impact in one day. That's a trickle through day. So I mean, for us in terms of like tax revenue, we have to wait for the jobs to get created and then pay and people get paid more and the whole thing ripples through. So it's a steady process. And very uncertain economy for nothing makes sense the last 3 years from my standpoint. And I've been watching economic stuff since 95,
Yeah.
my first budget in 96 as a staffer. So I just can't explain it. I just don't understand the economics of this. And economists use historical records to try to predict the future, and I don't think we can still.
No, I think we're setting some new parameters these past couple of years for sure to go forward on.
Yeah, researchers in a couple of years' time are going to look back at this time period and try to decipher exactly what was going on in our economy in the US, but also on a global level. And it's going to take a bit of time for that to unravel.
Yeah, exactly. What's coming up in your committee this year, Techie?
Not a lot. I mean, we're still waiting for bills to get a referral to next committee, steering and policy, ways and means, a third reading. I mean, I'm waiting for stuff to move around. So I'm a little annoyed that it's been 6 weeks and I don't know why I don't know my own bills, much less the committee bills, don't know why they are not leaving the clerk's office to second space. It's out of my control, but I'm getting a little annoyed as it's hard to work if you don't know what committee to advocate to next.
Right, exactly. Yeah, you need to be able to see the road in front of you before you can drive.
That's correct. I mean, we have the same bill tracking system you see on the internet. My internal system updates at the same time the public system does. So I don't have any special more insight than you have because we're using the same system essentially. And once it leaves joint committee, it has to go to another committee, whether it be a committee of referral or committee of next review. And you can't advocate to another committee if the bill, we don't know where the bill is. So as you can tell from how I'm talking, I'm a bit frustrated here that me and the staff are unable to do our job if we don't know where the bill is yet. So we have a another public hearing probably going to get set up, but it's only going to be for one late file bill, looks like. And we have some home petitions, again, these liquor license requests from cities and towns to try to get past the quota, and reviewing those. And we've been doing those by letter testimony only. And we're in the Joint Route 10 now. So, just to do a little review, the Joint Route 10, the day the bill hits my committee, I have 30 days to have a public hearing and take an action on the bill. And the action could be also including an extension order on the bill. So, I mean, hopefully I don't get like, whoa, actually, I prefer to get like six or seven in a package at a time. Then I can deal with them all at once as opposed to getting one a week and I get one in 3 weeks and one in, another 3 weeks. I'd rather have like a chunk hit at once, deal with it at one time in one hearing, and then quickly parse out what the next steps are at community level. So, some extension orders are still waiting. Actually, most of my extensions are still waiting in the Senate for approval. House extension order requests are already waiting in the other branch. And a modern economic development bill, the Joint Committee Economic Development Emerging Technologies has filed an extension order of that bill. So from my standpoint and my stuff, I'm kind of like in a frustrated holding pattern.
Yeah, hurry up and wait.
Hurry up and wait. Then you got the housing bond bill, though, that's floating around. You have an information technology bond bill floating around, too. So, we got some other pieces that we're kind of keeping an eye on as just, not any other member, not a chair, because I don't chair those committees, just to keep an eye on those things. So, I'm not saying we're super busy, but once I get to like April, week of April 8th, we're going to go a little bonky for like 6 weeks.
Yep, you go 0 to 100.
Yeah, so as you can tell, I'm like taking advantage of a little bit of downtime to get my brain reset as I mentally prepare myself for like bonky period where just everything's flying through the air and you got to keep track of where things are. And we may have the clerk's office do all the referrals in one day and suddenly our system lights up and says, hey, all your stuff's here, then we got to move quick. So we're trying to beat the July 31st clock.
Okay, so enjoy the lull before the storm.
Yeah, if you want a job that has like, 95 consistency, forget about going to events, forget about, the campaign, forget about all that, just the status part of the job. Want this consistency of 9 to 5, it's predictable, how the day's gonna go. I mean, this is not the life for you.
Right,
There are
right.
days where I'm doing like 11 hours of sanity and then 4 days later nothing's going on.
Right.
So
You're going to visit the Korean consulate, you said?
yeah, I'm having dinner tonight with the Korean consulate. We do one or two, mostly two meals a year. We get up a date on geopolitics in the Korean Peninsula, but also talk about how what how's going on between Korean US relations, Korean Massachusetts relations. They like to get caught up on local politics as well, what's going on here. We always have these very stimulating conversations about how the world's working and what they're doing, what we're doing. And sometimes it's current events, or sometimes we do some small talk. So, Consul General Yun has been here, I think it was appointed in September. So this will be my first meeting with this Consul General. It'll be the House Asian Caucus is invited tonight. And, it's really an opportunity to see how things are going on somewhere else, and also provide an outsider point of view of how they see how we're doing. They are prohibited from engaging in politics. They are also prohibited in expressing too much opinion. But they are more allowed to provide their analysis about what they see how things are going in Massachusetts and the United States. So, it'll be a fun night. The Japanese consulate does the same thing. Those two in particular like to keep regular contact with the Asian caucus and also us as the state of Massachusetts. They generally represent five or six states. They sometimes get all of New England, or sometimes Connecticut's part of New York for whatever reason. So, yeah, I know it's one of those things. So I don't decide how this works. It's their job, not mine. So we also get some knowledge about what's going on. Hey, I've been to Maine. This is what's going on in Maine. Oh, okay. Tell us what's happening. Right? And this is kind of part of the fun part of the gig, to get to learn about other things. So I can update you next time about how that dinner went. Maybe it was a very stimulating conversation, or maybe it's been very boring and nothing's going on. Either
I'd be
something's.
curious to also to see what they say about the relations with North Korea.
Yeah, they do. They have a very strong interest in updating us with North Korea's situation. Obviously, as we talked about last call, this the U.S. presence in Asia is much greater than anybody ever think about, because if you start really thinking your way through it, it's pretty expensive, as well as the U.S. allies from Australia to Korea, it's a long line of U.S. allies. So, yeah, this is kind of, I mean, it'll be fun. And then, like I said, we'll do something with the Japanese down the road. And we'll see what happens next. So,
All righty. How do we get a hold of you, Jackie?
let me do one more quickie, two updates. So,
Oh,
we
sure.
have two updates. Bill Driscoll, our good friend Bill Driscoll from Milton, is going to run for Senator Walter Timothy seat. So, our friend next door who chairs the Emergency Prep Committee. The House, is going to make a run for the Senate, as Walter Timothy is going to go run for Circuit Courts in Norfolk County. And then
His
I will.
father's old job.
Yeah, the same name, folks, different part of the family, but same name. Yeah, Walter Sr., Walter Jr. And then, our longtime transportation chair, Bill Strauss, has decided to retire. So we made that announcement on Friday. Again, we have all the speculation what's going on. As I like to say, I think transportation chair is going to be one of those chairs that a lot of other members are going to be clamoring to try to become chair of. Right? It's one of those very popular chairmanships. He was a transportation chair when I got there 14 years ago. So he's been transportation chair for a very, very, very long time. So by my rough count, whether a midterm resignation or a not running for office again, I think I count four Republicans and 12 Democrats so far. And I think we may be done. I think there may be a couple left on my list as a possibility, but I think we're closing on finishing regarding members leaving, unless a county seat becomes available, which again is so with Walter Timothy. Other parts of the state may have a change in county level, and legislators may think about moving to those jobs. And some people may not realize this, but if you're like in Western Mass and you got a job that's like 10 minutes away from home, you're going to take that job as opposed to driving like 3 and a half hours to Boston.
Oh, sure. Yeah, absolutely.
That quality of life issue depending where part of the state you live in. And we tend to forget, since we're from Quincy, Boston is, despite the traffic, and the T, it's not that far. But it coming in from like Western Mass or deep in the Cape or parts of the Vermont border, it's a hike. So there's opportunity to run for either local office or county offices. People, particularly those areas, take a strong look at that as that I really want to drive that far.
Yeah, and there's a cost factor too. Absolutely. Yeah.
So, like I said, I think we're close to done. And maybe I'll get surprised next couple of weeks of who else decides to not run for election or not run for election here and run for something else.
Although the Quincy delegation is all running again, yes.
Yeah, I got my nomination papers going to the clerk's office, and I talked to Senator Keene, and he's working on his, and everyone else is going to get their papers in, and we're pretty. I mean, I'm not very concerned. Done enough signature drives.
Right.
We'll get the minimum number plus a good buffer. And also, you saw the Free Jacks on our social media. So,
Oh, yes.
congratulations to Free Jacks on their championship win last year. And we had a fun time recognizing the state senate and taking a mini tour of the House chamber. And obviously, the season's underway, and we wish them the best. So, hey, this is a little bit of fun things here. And we also had a appointment of the youth advisory council for the governor, and includes one Quincy kid, and we got a few Quincy kids coming in for student government end of next week, April 4th.
Nice.
So, yeah, so we got some great things going on in the city, with youth and state government.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, there's always something for sure. And of course, next year will be the Quincy 400 celebration.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on there, so you tell me what's going to happen.
As soon as I know, I'll let you know, Techie.
I got a lot, no, I got a lot happening at one time, so Joe's going to have to update me on what's going there, and then I'll question Joe about it.
We got you covered. Not a problem.
So my phone number, folks, 617-722-2370, 617-722-2370. We are staffed, and sometimes the person in the front desk gets overwhelmed. So please remember, it's Jerry Parasella's office, not my office, who controls the suite. So you have to wait a little while to get through the prompts. Tacky.chan@mahouse.gov, tacky.chan@mahouse.gov. Please happy to email us. We do read our emails. I read my emails all day, all night, and then categorize. We talked about constituent databases last time, so you know how I categorize things and what systems I use. We'll try to get back to you. If it's like a real emergency, obviously leave us a voicemail. The voicemails come to our emails, by the way. Just so we do see them that way, even if we're not in the office. We have State Representative Tacky Chan. You can see Free Jacks on my Facebook, as well as at Tacky Chan on X. So you can see those pictures of us and how I'm out of place with these folks with a picture.
They're very tall men. They're very big.
They're pretty wide. It's you actually see them in person, you're like,
I
wow, you
know.
guys are pretty wide. And then you got State Representative Tacky Chan Facebook and Twitter, I talked about, or X. And then MALegislature.gov. I very much encourage everyone to use MALegislature.gov. It's a great way to find your bills, as well as watch past public hearings and get information about the legislature. And tackychin.org is our reference page. Find some useful phone numbers. And of course, you and Joe and I are here every 1 or 2 weeks, depending on our schedules. And you can send Joe questions at QATV if you want to have a special request with Joe, to have something Joe. Don't let Joe pick the topic. How's that sound?
Oh, neat. Okay.
Yeah,
Fun.
you pick the topic and you tell Joe. And of course, check in with Joe in the morning on, AM Quincy to get your 10-minute spiel on what's going on in the world locally. So, no shortage of information you get about the city, and no shortage of ways to reach us.
Right. It's the beauty of local access. We're right here with you.
Yeah, Joe, give everyone your email in a little bar later.
I will do that, but they can go right to our website and they can get me that way too. So,
So,
or I like snail mail. I'm old fashioned, so drop me a letter.
yeah, drop Joe a letter. What, April Fool's is coming too, right?
That's
We'll speak
right.
April Fool's Day. So, everyone have a wonderful rest of March, and enjoy April Fool's Day. Some lighthearted humor, nothing mean.
Yeah, look out
That's
for kick me signs on my back.
yeah, exactly. We'll see what next week brings. But you all take care, and try to stay warm.
Okay, thanks, Jackie. We'll see you next week.
See you next week.